thinking about this. It has shaken me to my core in a way that I couldn't have predicted. This was a powerful individual speaking freely and openly about sexually predatory behavior. The shameful comments about our body, the disrespect of our ambitions and intellect, the belief that you can do anything you want to a woman, it is cruel. It's frightening. And the truth is, it hurts.
This is for my girls all around the world.
You are listening to WERALP 96.7 FM in Arlington, and this is Enlighten Me. I am your host, Andrea Cambrin, and on the show today, talking about work-life balance. A new report from the Center for American Progress crunches the numbers. Parents are stretching themselves thin when it comes to the misalignment between our children's school schedules and our work schedules. We'll find out what the recommendations are from Katherine Brown. She is the Vice President of Education Policy at the Center for American Progress. Hope you enjoy the interview. We will be back. You're listening to WERALP 96.7 FM. This is Enlighten Me. I'm your host, Andrea Cambrin. We'll be right back after this. You are listening to WERALP 96.7 FM in Arlington. This is Enlighten Me, and I am your host, Andrea Cambrin. So education has always been an issue that I care, that has been near and dear to my heart. And the Center for American Progress has always put out these amazing comprehensive reports that are just really good for people to get an in-depth and a personal look at what's going on in everyday families. And today I have with me Katherine Brown. She's the Vice President of Education Policy at the Center for American Progress. And she's outlined this report called Working 9 to 5, How School Schedules Make Life Harder for Working Parents. And she's here today on WERA. She joins us now. Thank you so much for joining us, Katherine.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this report, how did this come to be? Because I know that the Center for American Progress does these regularly, but what made you guys focus in on specifically the discrepancies between school schedules and work schedules?
Well, it's the kind of issue that I've heard a lot about and experienced a lot in my own personal life. And I have two kids in elementary school, mm-hmm. and my colleague and co-author Ulrich Boser also has two kids in elementary school, and we would frequently lament how challenging it can be to navigate the various school closings and the early dismissal and the things that pop up randomly, and then, you know, feel gratitude for the fact that we have very flexible schedules with paid leave and, you know, enough income that we can afford childcare when needed, and, right. and even with all those resources, it's still really hard. And so we would reflect on how much harder it would be if you were low income, if you had an inflexible work schedule, if you did not have paid leave, if you did not have a supportive partner. And we just sort of started thinking about, could we actually, like, has anyone actually looked at it? How many days are schools actually closed? And we started to add them up and then thought we would do it for the largest school districts in the country. And it kind of took off from there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the same boat. You know, I have two children myself, and you know, like you said, the amount of, you know, luckily I do have flex time as well where I can kind of take off, you know, if need be. But it is hard. It is really hard to sit here in the middle of the day, especially when they have like these, the performances, the school, yeah. you know, things, all, most of those things are during the day. And it's hard. It
and
is hard.
Teacher conferences.
Yeah. Yes. All those things are during the day. And it's hard for parents to sit here and say, okay, let me take off in the middle of the day when probably I'm the most busy, you know, to just say, okay, guys, I'm going to go to school because, and we know that it matters. But at the same time, it's kind of like that balance is just so hard to manage.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's not infrequent. I mean, I think one of the things our study showed is, you know, 29 days, and this is excluding summer. So this is just between when school starts in the fall and it ends in the spring. schools are closed on average. Some districts like LA and New York are actually closed even longer than the average, but on average for 29 days, which is two full work weeks longer than the typical full-time private sector worker has in paid time off. You know, and that's even assuming you want to dedicate every single day of paid time off mm-hmm. to taking care of your child on a PD day, which most people don't. They want to have an actual vacation.
Yep.
So it's really, we have a really outdated system that doesn't reflect the reality of working parents, and it's a problem.
And that's another thing. I mean, you guys talked about the fact that it is an outdated system. Talk about the history of how it came to be that school schedules and our work schedules are so misaligned.
Yeah, I mean, there's some debate about the origins of the school schedule, but many people think it began in sort of agrarian society where kids were let out early so they could help with the family on the farm. I think what is indisputable is that these schedules emerged at a time where it was pretty typical to have, you know, one parent, most likely the father, working and the mother staying home. And I think our school systems are actually designed with that model in mind because they assume that there is a parent available to take care of the kids very frequently.
Yeah.
And we know that today, a huge number, most parents, most women are in the workplace, most women with elementary school age kids, although we found that women with elementary school age kids are less likely to be working than kids with parents with older kids because they're less comfortable or less able to navigate this. The kids are less able to be by themselves. But yeah, I mean, we haven't invested the resources in our schools to allow them to be more aligned with the reality of the way people work today.
Yeah. And this disproportionately affects, you know, minorities, low income people. I mean, I can't even imagine how it would be if I were, you know, not able to even take off.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, we cite in our report that 39% of low-income workers, only 39% of low-income workers have paid time off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a huge percentage of workers that don't. And they're also low-income workers are much more likely to have schedules that are unpredictable. So they'll find out, you know, the week before when they're working, which can make it particularly difficult to plan in advance. They often have rigid schedules. So if you're not actually able to leave, if you're supposed to be there between, you know, 7 and 4, like a retail job, that can be particularly hard. And then, of course, if you're low income overall, you have fewer resources in order to pay out of pocket if need be. And, of course, we also live in a time when people are less likely to live in close proximity to their family members. So those networks have frayed a bit, and it is harder. And it's a real stress for parents, especially low-income parents, because they worry about their kids and are they, you know, in a high-quality place. And I think sometimes it leads them to just do whatever they can do. And that could mean putting the kid in front of the TV or putting them with someone they don't totally trust because they've got to keep a job down. And that's important, too.
Yeah. You talk about, like, how it wouldn't even be that hard to align themselves with a normal schedule, with a schedule that where the kids were in school until, like, 5 or 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we really wanted to drive home with this report is that thinking out of the box, and it can be done, it is being done in some schools around the country, and it doesn't, what we're definitely not trying to say is a teacher should have to work longer hours
sure.
for the same amount of pay.
Yeah.
It's a very hard job to be a teacher, and that is absolutely not what we're advocating. We've seen some innovative models where schools are putting teachers on staggered schedules. So one teacher works a shift in the morning, another teacher works a shift in the afternoon, or every teacher works 4 days a week.
Yeah.
And the experience of the parent or the child is a 9-to-5 school day, but you're, you know, leveraging other resources from the community, for example. You know, even if you're doing an after school program, which is a perfectly, you know, reasonable way to approach this problem, many do, you know, putting that on a sliding scale so low-income families actually don't have to pay a huge amount out of pocket in order to have that extra coverage. We found kind of a shocking only 30% of low-income schools actually even offer before and after care, which is really surprising, I think, to those of us who just experience that as the norm.
So
it can be done. It is being done. And we also cite in our report that school districts could use Title I funds, which is a federal funding source that's fairly flexible to do this. It's encouraged in the new Every Student Succeeds Act. And we hope it will happen more.
Yeah. Well, you also talk about what administrators can do to improve some of the, you know, issues that parents deal with as far as, let's talk about some of those recommendations as well.
Yeah, so one that seems fairly obvious to us, but you know, surprisingly doesn't happen. We hear from a lot of parents who have children in different schools that the schedules aren't aligned. So having, particularly in this world that we're living in now where there are a lot of charter schools and other schools, I think one thing administrators could do is try to convene all the school leaders from a region and try to get them on a similar schedule, or ideally an exactly the same schedule, so you could predict, and if you have kids in multiple schools, you'll have the same spring break, for example, and the same winter break. That makes it marginally easier. I think being more flexible with healthcare policies. I don't know if you've ever gotten a call from the school nurse.
Yeah, I have.
But they tend to call and say your child has, you know, 100 fever. You need to pick them up immediately.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, sometimes and they're often unable to administer Tylenol or even just basic over-the-counter drugs. And so being a little bit more flexible and understanding that, you know, maybe the child just needs to lie in the nurse's office for a few hours. It's not going to be the end of the world. They can take a nap.
Yeah.
Would go a long way. I think aligning snow days with the major employers, for example, here in DC, sometimes we see this, we see schools closed on days that the federal government is not.
Mm-hmm.
And that is obviously very challenging for parents if they're expected to be at work, but the school is closed.
Yeah.
And childcare workers can't get to their house. That can be really hard. So, yeah, there's definitely some things that could be done. I think the key thing is to look at the school schedule from the perspective of the parent and try to figure out how they can make it easier for them.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Catherine Brown. She is the Vice President of Education Policy at the Center for American Progress. Her new report out, Working 9 to 5, How School Schedules Make Life Harder for Working Parents. Catherine, I read an article earlier this year, and I was trying to bring it up before I was talking to you, and I just couldn't find it. But it was also talking about, in regards to thinking outside of the box, talking about, you know, the fact that maybe we as parents, maybe we as workers need to adjust our schedules to be more in line with schools. And I thought to myself, that's kind of interesting. You know, as employers, we're always under the notion that we have to work 9 to 5. And the concept was, you know, maybe we need to adjust our work schedules to work until 3, basically. And I thought that was kind of interesting too. What do you think about that? What are your thoughts on that? As far as us adjusting ourselves as workers to be more in line with the school?
Yeah, I think that is a great question. And certainly employer flexibility is a huge part of the solution here.
Yeah.
I think probably what needs to happen is employers need to become more flexible. Employers of all types of workers need to become more flexible. We need to see much more paid leave for parents. And yeah, I think I read the same study. It was like in Finland or Switzerland where
they're
actually doing like a significantly reduced work week and finding just as much productivity. I thought
right.
that was very interesting too.
Yeah. Because it...
But I also think schools need to come a little closer to parents. Like I think solution is somewhere
in the middle.
Schools are providing more coverage, recognizing the reality of workers' lives, and employers are recognizing the reality of parents' lives and being more forgiving, more understanding, more generous with leave so that they can go see, you know, they want to go to your kid's concert. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to have the time to do that.
Well, and I was also thinking about the fact that, you know, you're talking about early or after school programs, and some of the after school programs that some schools provide are very enriching for kids. And it's sad that, you know, not every school provides those. And, you know, kids aren't getting that type of enrichment after school that some schools, you know, have. You know, so it's so unfortunate that, you know, even for parents that do work until 6 o'clock that can be able to afford those after school programs, some kids don't even get that option.
Exactly. I think that's right. And when we envision a 9 to 5 school day, we're not envisioning 9 to 5, you know, 8 hours on academics. What we're really envisioning is a more cohesive school day that recognizes the, you know, biological rhythms of the child and builds in that enrichment, builds in recess and builds in physical activity. So it would still, I mean, in my perfect world, you'd still get the chance to play on a sports team or do mm-hmm. art or do some of those things. They would just be hosted at the school site. So you wouldn't have to, for example, which we saw a lot in this report, where there, even when there is an after school program, you have to take your kids to some other location. So it's not logistically easy. It's not run by the school.
Yeah.
And another random fact is, you know, we'd sometimes see lunch being provided at 10:30 in the morning because they're trying to cycle all these kids through the cafeteria and the day is compressed. So I think if you actually just extended the day to 9 to 5 and absorbed in those enrichment activities, which you're right, they're so important for children's development. I think you could get happier kids and happier parents.
Yeah. Yeah. I also looked at recently in Baltimore, there was a study on, you know, the discipline of kids. And there was a school mm-hmm. in Baltimore that practices mindful meditation as a way to discipline kids, you know, if they were, you know, acting up or in a state where they weren't in a line with the classroom. What do you think about those types of enrichment programs for kids, you know, trying to foster a different way that we teach kids how to learn?
There is so much research on the importance of mindfulness that I think that's a really exciting area to explore. And certainly a lot of research has come out, some of it by my organization, the Center for American Progress, which has looked at the, you know, disproportionate discipline that we see with, particularly with African American and Hispanic boys. And mm-hmm. so I love the idea of thinking creatively about how we might, you know, intervene to yeah. give kids the tools they need to be successful. I think the other thing more and more research is bearing out is that the skills that kids need to be successful are not just reading and math skills. I mean, I think we always knew that, but there's more and more research to support that this idea of self-regulation in particular, which is one of the tools that mindfulness and meditation gives you, is absolutely critical for your lifetime outcome. So I think that's really exciting, and I'd love to see that study. I didn't see it, but I think it's a very fruitful idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just one of those things where I think that in thinking outside of the box for how to educate our children, you know, we need to think of also alternate ways to discipline them as well. And if there's mm-hmm. something in place that can curb that and curb those behaviors, it's always to me a way to do it in a way that the kids appreciate it as well, you know?
Yeah, there was an interesting article in The Atlantic. I think it came out yesterday that really documented all the laws that and ways in which we outlaw adolescence, like make it actually criminal behavior for a child to disrupt a class.
Yeah.
Which is obviously, you know, a core part of the way kids behave and have for centuries. And
right.
So, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. We need a new approach to discipline.
Catherine Brown, she is the Vice President for Education Policy at the Center for American Progress. Thank you so much, Catherine, for joining us today. One quick question before we go. What would be the Center for American Progress's charge if a Hillary Clinton became president? And what would be the charge for the Center for American Progress to put forth these recommendations?
Well, as a progressive think tank, we try to generate new ideas to support you know, progressive candidates and elected office holders. And
yeah.
Hillary Clinton certainly is the more progressive person on the presidential ballot and on November 8th. And so I think if she were to become president, we would hope to work with her administration to implement some of these ideas through, you know, regulations
yeah.
or convenings or using the bully pulpit. But I agree with you that she's been a strong champion for working families
yeah.
and I would hope that this is the kind of thing she would take seriously and try to think about ways that we could not just have family medical leave and childcare, which are absolutely core components of a progressive agenda, but also school schedules that better align to
make yeah.
the K-12 part of a child's life also work for working parents.
Yes. I mean, like I said, you know, with my two kids, it is infinitely hard to try to take off work, especially during the day when I'm usually my busiest, to go to a school performance, but sometimes that has to be done, you know, and it's hard to do that. And it's hard to try to talk to the administrators at the school to say, hey, can you change this for me? knowing that, you know, other parents feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely not alone. We've been surprised at the response to this report. There's been a lot of interest, and I think it's because this is something that is just what parents experience on a daily basis, and they're looking for some systemic solution. So it doesn't feel like I think there's a lot of guilt out there. I mean, people want to do the right thing by their kids. Of course they do. And they want to do the right thing by their jobs. And so that's sort of our societal challenge, is how do we support parents in meeting both of their obligations?
Yeah. Just one more thing that you just brought up as I was about to let you go, and I will after this. But you're so right. You're so right in the guilt, because it is one of those things that you don't realize that you're trying to balance things. But especially as mothers, I think, and fathers too, but especially as mothers, there is this guilt that we hold with us whenever we are pulled in too many different directions. And families mean a lot to us, as well as it is important to us to do our jobs well in that aspect too. So in order for us to feel like we are doing a good job in both, sometimes we're failing at both. And, you know, I just think that this report was so important just because it lays bare that, hey, there is a problem and we need to fix it.
Yeah. Yep. I thank you for that. And I couldn't agree with you more that it also, I think, disproportionately impacts women. I think women still bear more, not all men do a tremendous amount too, but I think women bear more of the guilt and responsibility, especially for those daytime pickups, the random days off. I'm not sure why, but I think that tends to fall more on women. And and I think it's part of what one of the things our report showed is that it contributes to the wage gap. Because, of course, if you take time off when your kids are young so that you can help them when they don't have school or in the after school hours during elementary school, which 1 million women make that decision, that's one of the things our analysis showed, then you're not earning as much during that time. And even when you go back to work, when your children are in middle school, you're on a lower wage trajectory than you would have been. So, It's a pocketbook issue as well as a guilt issue, but it's certainly important for women.
Yep. The report, Working 9 to 5, How School Schedules Make Life Harder for Working Parents, out from the Center for American Progress. Today I have my guest, Catherine Brown. She is the Vice President for Education Policy at the Center for American Progress. Catherine, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This has been Enlighten Me. I am your host, Andrea Cambron, on WERALP 96.7 FM in Arlington.
Ongoing support for WERA's operation and programming is provided by a generous underwriting grant from Gary R. Thayer, promoting innovation and excellence in community-based, independent radio broadcasting for the digital age, and by Main Street Bank, growing communities and helping customers achieve their goals. More information on the web at mstreetbank.com.